Welcome to another episode of Software Gone Wild. Today I have two of my favorite guests on the show, and not only that, they are working on some burning hot product that they'll share with us today. And I will not go into details of what they're doing. They will tell me all about that. So welcome David Barroso and Eliza Jasinska. How are you guys doing?
Hi, Ivan. Very well. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. Sun is shining. It's hot. I could go climbing today, so I'm a bit tired. But yeah, I can survive. So what are you doing these days?
David first. Me first.
I can start.
Okay.
Well, right now I'm working on this tool that we will be talking about here at Spotify. And I'm also working in the SDN router that we discussed in some previous show. We're kind of implementing it right now, so it will be live quite soon.
Oh, that's awesome. So you're ready to roll it out into production?
Yeah, it's what we are doing right now. So hopefully in a couple of weeks we'll have it in two different IXPs.
That's awesome. So when you go live, let me know. I want to write about this.
I will let you know.
And with the way these things are published, you'll probably be live before people start listening to this. I really have to streamline the whole process. And Eliza, what are you doing these days?
Yeah, so David and I started working on this together. We kind of came up with the same idea, I guess, at the same time. We were hanging out and both had the need for auto-configuring a multi-vendor network. I was doing that at a previous customer, and then we figured out that we're both trying to do the same thing and joined forces and kind of came up with what we were talking about here today.
Oh, and before we go into what you're working on, you just came out of the closet at the RIPE meeting, right? And admitted you have your own company. So the company has this awesome name, right? What is it? I forgot it.
Big Wave IT. Yes. So that's my consultancy shop. I've been invoicing previous customers through this, and I'm currently looking for new projects. So if anything is on, give me a call.
Eliza, don't be shy. Hey, everyone. Eliza is available for network automation consulting. You know how to get in touch with her. Do it.
Thank you, Ivan.
Okay. So what have you guys been working on?
David, go first.
So we are working on this Python API that we called Napalm, which stands for Network Automation and Programmability Abstraction Layer with Multi-Vendor Setup. That's a convoluted name. We just wanted to have Napalm as name. Anyway, we started working in this Python API to try to kind of unify all the multiple vendors that we had in our network. We were working both with kind of the same vendors. Those are Juniper, Arista, IOS XR. I was working as well with FortiGate as firewalls. And the goal of this API was to try to unify how we interact with those devices. So instead of having to code the same thing over and over for different vendors, just to code once and use it everywhere.
Okay, so if I remember correctly, what you were doing when we last met was you were generating configurations with Ansible, if I remember correctly, and then you were pushing those configurations to the switches that you had at that time. And right when we were talking, you were like changing vendors, right?
Yeah, exactly. We had all this workflow set up with Juniper, which is our main vendor in the network right now. And so we have all the tooling around Juniper, which in my opinion has the best CLI so far, by far. If you're familiar with Juniper, which you are probably, they have this commit, they have the replace, you can load configuration and the device will kind of figure out what changes to apply to get to the candidate configuration from the running. So all the tooling was built around that. So Ansible would kind of to build the entire configuration for the device according to the templates that we have for each service, and then push the final configuration. and the device should kind of figure out how to reach from the running configuration to the candidate configuration that we pushed. So with Napal, what we tried to do, what we did actually, is to mimic the same behavior for the rest of the devices in our vendor. So we can follow this same workflow for EOS on Arista, which is my new vendor in some parts of the network, for iOS XR, which is also in some parts of the network, and for FortiOS, which is the firewall that we have in some parts as well.
Okay, so what you were using on Juniper was configuration replace. So you build the new configuration and then you just overwrote the old one, and Junos would automatically figure out what the delta is and what has to be unconfigured and what has to be added or what has to be modified, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And now you have the same functionality on Arista EOS, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
So are you using that one, or are you using your own code to figure out what the differences are?
No, one of the main features that we requested Arista to start using them in the network was to build themselves this kind of solution. We didn't want to bring a vendor in our network that didn't have the tooling that we needed. I mean, we are not programming in assembly, we are configuring the network. So we want tools to configure the network, not to kind of program some weird CPU. So that was one of the requirements for them to buy them. So we are using what the feature that they built and released recently, which they call them configuration, I think. Mm-hmm. So that's available as of a couple of months ago, I think. It's on one of the latest versions of the 4.14 train. I don't remember which one.
Yeah, I think it's in late 4.14, yeah.
I had a little bit of a problem with that fact, because now first we have to upgrade our entire network before we can actually use that feature. But I guess for someone who's just getting started right now and doesn't already have a complete Arista network at his hand, that's a possible situation.
No, but yeah. Lisa, it's always like that. You have to use a cool feature, you have to upgrade the whole network. You're happy if you have enough RAM and flash to upgrade it.
At least they build, I mean, the feature. I mean, some other vendors, they still don't even think that that's something that we need. I mean, being able to apply the changes in an atomic way instead of just executing as we present it, I mean, that's plainly, I mean, unacceptable, in my opinion.
True.
Now,
true.
Let me mention that Nexus OS still doesn't have configuration replace, and that the official way to replace a configuration from Cisco's manual is to erase the running configuration, load new startup configuration, and reload the box.
And that's impactless, right?
Yeah, that's totally impactless, yeah.
So I came with a couple of other requirements into the picture here when David and I started talking about this. For example, I wasn't looking to generate complete configurations, but I have configuration snippets that I was trying to upload. So I think we kind of started just talking about what his requirements are, what my requirements are, and then came up with like the big sketch of this is what the library is supposed to do and this is what we all need. And it sounded like that could be something useful for other people to do too. So we started writing this on GitHub in open source, I guess.
So it's all on GitHub, and anyone can join and start working on either core functionality or other vendors or whatever they like.
That would be amazing.
Okay, so we need to publish this as soon as possible so that you get more contributors.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that would be nice.
So right now, obviously, you support NetConf on Junos. And I'm guessing you're using EAPI on EOS because they don't have anything else.
Exactly.
What are you doing on XR?
do you really want to know?
Well, actually, yes.
So on XR, I'm logging in via SSH with literally a three-line expect script, and then dropping into the XML shell, and then from that point on using XML. we're going to talk about the different portions of this. So we're talking about the configuration portion. There's also a data retrieval portion that we put in. This one, there were pros and cons for which the XML data or the netconf data that it's trying to be does not provide all the information that we would need. So there's a little bit hacky way of trying to, pretty much we're just trying to get unified information from every device. If netconf is available, we're doing it the netconf way or some API. If not, whatever goes to bring that information out.
Including screen scraping and regular expressions?
Yes.
Sorry, had to mention it.
Well, see, the problem with that is, and I really don't like it, and it's really not the future-proof way to go, but we're operating those networks today, and we need that information today. What else are we supposed to do?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, the main problem today is that there are only two vendors providing, like, structured data, and those are Juniper and Arista. No one else is doing anything else. I mean, Cisco has, like, 1% of their data available through kind of structured data. The rest is
all of the configuration portions that are static in the config anyways. None of the operational data is in the XML.
No, it's not exactly true. You can, at least in iOS, write your own screen scraper that would scrape the output of show IP BGP neighbors and present this to you in an XML format. Not that it would be documented anywhere, you can guess how it
right.
works. With that level of documentation, I would actually prefer my own screen scraping.
Yeah, so for the retrieval of the data, I'm screen scraping on Cisco IOS XR. For the commit and anything like config merging, etc., we've been using the CLI portion of the XML request where you can just put normal configuration snippets in. And then a little bit, maybe a little bit backwards compared to Juniper, but there was also a way to figure out what the actual diff is between the current configuration and the one we want to go to. So that's kind of working without us having to do it manually as David has.
By the way, does Arista have configuration diff?
It has for the new feature that they came up with on the 4.14 release, 15, sorry, mm-hmm. which is the config session. And that one is kind of like the config mode of Junos, where you go to config, then you apply commands, then you can do a diff, and then finally you do a commit. So for that one, you can do a diff. For the config replace, which is where you load the entire configuration and then apply you go to this new configuration from the running. For that, they don't have a diff. So for that one, I'm kind of building the diff myself with Napalm.
Ah, so you are doing like contextual diff, trying to figure out when a new section starts and then doing all sorts of crazy stuff within a section.
Yeah, and it's not fun at all.
No, I did that once, but I was using Perl, not Python, so it was easier.
It's not that fun.
No.
Yeah, iOS XR was a little bit easier. They have the show configuration merge, I guess, which also brings you a little bit closer, but is not 100% the same as Juniper. So I guess most of the time we kind of spend talking about, well, how does your vendor work? How does my vendor work? How do we make it so it's kind of the same thing? So we're expecting the same result as we execute things against them.
And by the way, the fourth vendor on your list is Fortinet. So how bad are they?
Well, to be honest, I don't want to start cursing here, but I should. I mean, that's horrible. I mean, their CLI, I don't know if you had the pleasure of working with
no.
that CLI, but I mean, that's probably the most disturbing CLI I have ever seen. There is only one thing, is that the configuration in the device is kind of structured in a way that it's easier to parse, because there is no support here of APIs or config management. I mean, there is nothing here. I mean, this device is designed to be operated with their own tool. They have a tool called Fortin Manager, which is kind of like Cisco Works. I mean, it works for their devices in up to some point, but there is no sane way of configuring those devices. So here, everything is done with expect and a lot of screen scraping and trying to guess how to do stuff. Even the diff is done manually. The merging part, when you do the config replace, it's also kind of, I compile the configuration that is live, then I compile the configuration that I want to go with. I kind of compute how to get from A to B and extract the commands that would be needed and then apply only those commands. So it's kind of messy and complex.
Awful.
But it seems to be working. I mean, we are using this in production. I brought that the library. It's called PyFG. And it's also available on GitHub. I don't know if anyone is using it, but we are using it in production. And even though it's really, really messy, it seems to be working. And we use it almost weekly. And so far, it doesn't have nothing broke.
So maybe it's worth noting that Napalm kind of unifies different core libraries that were either already existing or we wrote to fill in gaps. PyFG for the FortiGate thing, PyEOS that you guys already talked about, I think last time that David was working on, and then there's the Juniper one that is comes out of Juniper, supported by them in open source. PyEasy, exactly. And then we rolled PyEOS XR on top of that, and Napalm in the end is unifies all of those separate libraries into one access, one unified access for all of them.
So you take whatever is available on one hand. On the other hand, whenever there is nothing, you write your own code, and it's in the category of you don't want to see how the sausage is being made.
But it's still on GitHub, so you can if you really want to.
Yeah, but don't look there.
Don't look there.
You know, like the Wizard of Oz, there's nothing to look at. Don't look there.
Yeah, at the end of the day, Napalm is kind of like a wrapper. I mean, there is no vendor code there. It's using libraries that kind of interact with the different operating systems. So there is no kind of like EOS or iOS or Junos specific code. There is just using the library that it's interacting with those devices already.
Okay, so what functionality does this wrapper provide to the outside world then?
As we mentioned before, the functionality is kind of to unify all the different, I mean, all the different ways of applying configuration and retrieving data into only one mode. So you can code once, as I mentioned before, and then use it everywhere, well, kind of. So you have, for example, we have an Ansible model that is the one that I'm using, and that code, it doesn't have any if vendor equals EOS do this, if vendor equals Junos do this. The code is the same because it's using Napalm, and it's Napalm who is kind of translating what I want to do to the specifics of every vendor. So if you're a user of Napalm, you don't have to bother. You don't have to worry if it's the code is for Juniper or if it's for Fortinet or if it's for Cisco or whatever. You just have to code once and let Napalm figure out what to do.
That's perfect. And what can Napalm do?
So the methods that it supports right now were replacing entire configurations. That's what David was doing. Merging configurations, so pretty much applying
snippets.
That's
what you were doing, right?
That's what I was doing, exactly. And it kind of depends on the philosophy of the company, I guess, which way or how they structured their configs up front, which way is easier applicable. It loads those configuration, it diffs the config and tells you what the changes would be. You can discard, commit them, and roll them back again. That's kind of the initial feature list that we were going from. All of that is operational today. All of that is what David is using right now. And with that comes the Ansible module. So those are methods supported by Napalm. And then with that comes an Ansible module that provides direct access to the config loading via Ansible. And then right now we're continuing to work on gathering information, which is something I've already done that portion to some extent before, to pretty much unify into one data structure, retrieved information from the devices, like general facts, BGP neighbors, interface informations, and more.
Okay, so if we just focus on the second part for the moment, you can use Napalm to get the list of BGP neighbors from iOS XR, Arista, or Juniper.
Yes.
And you can send that to Ansible if you wish, so that you can do whatever you wish in Ansible with that information.
Yes. Yes, I'm actually planning to build like some proof of concept Ansible model to, before you start doing changes, kind of retrieve the number of BGP neighbors that you have, the number of routes that you are getting, and then do the same again after applying all the changes and trying to kind of figure out if you broke something or not.
Like a pre and a post check sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah. The pre would be like to build a baseline. Yeah. This was more or less my network before doing the changes, and this is how it is now after doing all the changes. So if I had before like, I don't know, 200 BGP neighbors up, and now I have 100, probably you should check what you did.
And you will do that in Ansible.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a proof of concept that I want to build because we are building this get BGP neighbor functionality, and then try to figure out if it makes sense or not.
No, but that's great.
I was using this before in a way where we were stuffing all of that information into a database, retrieving all the neighbors from everything in the network from all kinds of different vendors. And then using that database for all kinds of different open source software that people pretty much use in their networks, like monitoring if all the sessions are up, etc., state monitoring, interface monitoring, etc.
Oh, and just to mention for the people that are new to the podcast, we did this great podcast with Elisa a while ago, how they were using the tool with the unpronounceable name, PMHGT. to collect NetFlow data at Netflix and correlate that with the BGP information.
The key was it was at path BGP information at that point, yes.
Yeah, so that you got all the prefixes, not just the best prefixes, right?
But that's a different podcast.
Yeah. So if anyone wants to know more about that, go and find it and listen to it. Okay, so you can now, instead of writing your own BGP gathering code, you can use Napalm and just connect to the devices and call the get BGP neighbors function, and you get back the list of BGP neighbors and their state and the number of prefixes and so on, right?
Yes.
Sounds great. By the way, how do you figure out which device it is? Do I have to tell you this is a Cisco router, or are you trying to fingerprint them?
As of now, you have to tell the vendor that you are using. Right now, the way I'm using it is through Ansible, and Ansible is gathering all the inventory information from a backend that we have. So I have that information beforehand. Like, yeah, this is an Arista box. This is a Juniper box. Elisa and I were discussing about building this fingerprinting functionality, but I don't know if it's worth or not, to be honest.
It probably depends on the use case, what you already have and what the data is that you're working against.
Yeah, I would hope that you know what devices you have in your network that should be the baseline.
Yeah, I mean, if you're building some sort of automation, I guess that you will be doing, I mean, you will have some inventory.
You guys would be surprised.
You would be surprised. I'm positive that you have an inventory.
David's in this ideal situation where he can generate entire router configurations out of a database. I mean, come on. Barely anyone can do that.
Yeah, that's that.
I don't know anyone else who would be able to do that, at least not personally. I'm suspecting that there might be a 6-letter company and an 8-letter company that can do it. But not anyone I've met personally apart from David. Okay, if we go back to the configuration management stuff. So you can replace the configuration or add a snippet of configuration, and then you can decide to commit it or roll it back. How would you decide that? When would you say, okay, I need to discard a change?
Well, in my case, we have this workflow with Ansible where we generate the entire configuration. Then we load this configuration in the device, and then we present to the user in some way a diff. So the first it consists in two different runs, actually. The first run will compute this diff. So you actually load the configuration, you write the diff into a file, and then you discard the configuration. So you don't apply anything. So the user kind of can review this configuration. It's mostly just checking that the configuration changes are not too long or something like that. Just that the change makes sense, the changes. And then you run it again if you're happy applying the changes. So it's kind of like a manual process. There is a person actually validating the changes.
But once we gather all this session and interface information and do pre and post checks, it would be easy to, you know, look if it's the same, if the applies something, see if something happened after. Oh, well, we actually would have to apply it then to see if something changed. Oh, well, maybe not. You could send some warning out later and say, here is something different.
Yeah, you could definitely use that to verify that the post-change network is still similar to what you had previously.
Yeah, but someone still needs to make the decision to upload it or not.
Yeah, I mean, you have the tools. I mean, it's your responsibility to build kind of the workflow that you want. I mean, the workflow that I'm using is that one, but you should be able to kind of do anything that you want.
Okay, so what you're doing is you're replacing the config, but because you are working in running and candidate config mode, you are not exactly replacing it. You're just loading it into the box.
Yeah, you load it to the box, and then it's the box responsibility to kind of apply the delta from the running configuration to the candidate. The exception is, again, FortiGate, as we mentioned before, where I'm also the one responsible of building this delta, but anyway. So, yeah, I mean, it's called config replace, but you're not literally replacing the configuration. It's kind of like the box is building this delta, and the change is impactless. It's not like services are restarted or something like that. I mean, if you are adding new BGP networks, the previous ones are not affected at all.
Yeah, because the box is actually applying only the deltas, and if it doesn't bring down the BGP session, then it doesn't.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, but I like the idea of just loading the candidate config and tell the box to do the diff, discard the candidate, and log the diff somewhere.
Yeah, you can log it. I mean, you save it into a file and then you upload it to Git, for example, if you have your own repo, which we have. And then you can kind of keep track of the changes. Like, yeah, something happened yesterday. I mean, this was working before and now it's broken. So you can go there and see what were the changes in that moment and fix them. So it's really interesting to keep track of everything.
And this is definitely way better than using the standard version control, because with router configurations, that doesn't work that well, right?
No, not really.
Okay, and finally, you guys wrote this Ansible module to integrate this with Ansible. So this means I don't have to do the two passes anymore, right? I don't have to generate configs in Ansible and then use a different tool to push them to the routers or switches. It's just a single pass and it's done. Right?
Yeah. In the same playbook, you would basically say upload this configuration. There's a bunch of different switches that you can turn on and off if it should be replacing it or merging it, etc. And pretty much out of the same file, you say generate that template and then take that generated file and upload it somewhere.
Oh, by the way, yeah, that's a good point. Forgot to ask that before. So the configuration that you are replacing or uploading has to be the thing that the box would usually recognize, right?
Yeah, you have to. The key here is that you have to template your services for each vendor. Then the configuration is generated for that particular vendor. So you have the same service that could be applied to a Juniper switch or to an Arista switch, you will have to template the same thing twice. Once
in for different languages.
Yeah, exactly. You will use the same variable, so that means that your tool will not depend on the vendor, but still you have to build the service somehow.
Okay, so you're not providing any configuration language abstraction in the Napalm. It's just abstracting the methods to push the configuration to the boxes.
Yeah, exactly. The main problem I have with this kind of abstraction of the configuration is that vendors are doing that. I mean, Arista has its own Ansible modules. Juniper has its own as well. I think that Cisco might even have some. I don't know. But the problem is that they're really, really limited. You check their presentations, they always change the interface description and the VLANs associated to that interface. I think that my network is a bit more complex than that.
Yeah, this is what they usually do. Interface description, VLAN, interface shutdown, and maybe IP addresses.
Yeah, and that's pretty much useless. So what we wanted to do is to build something that you could template your own services and then just generate the config and apply it to the device, because then that means that you are in control of everything. I mean, you're not bounded by the tool, because the tool will just push configuration. So you just have to know how to template everything. You want to do MPLS VPN? Yeah, sure. I mean, you just have to template your config, put the variables there, and done. You want to do VXLAN? Then the same. You template everything and done.
Okay, but because you wrote this stuff, now I don't have to do any programming if I'm using one of these four types of boxes. I can just take Ansible, I can take your library, I start writing templates, and then I don't have to do anything else to be able to start using it, right?
Exactly. That was my problem when looking at the automation portion, and then people started raving in the past year or two about Ansible, and everyone was going Ansible, and then everyone who reported that they were using Ansible to automate their network, turns out they had a Juniper-only network in every single case.
So, I wonder why.
I wonder why, exactly. So that was my problem when looking at this initially, trying to figure out, so how do I interact with the other devices that don't provide this out of the box or don't have anything that the vendor comes up with by default?
Oh, by the way, a nasty question. Well, two of them. Let's start with the easier one. Let's say I'm using something like, the easiest possible one, BGP neighbors. And I'm listing the neighbors in some Ansible, what's it called, playbook, right?
Yeah.
And then I remove a neighbor. So how do you know that you have to generate a no neighbor statement? Where does that happen?
No, but that's done by the device itself. When you load the configuration, the device will check the candidate configuration that you pushed, and he will notice that there is kind of some configuration missing. Like, yeah, there is this neighbor that was configured before, now it's gone. So the box will kind of do whatever it has to do to get to the new candidate state.
Yeah, but that works for you because you're working with full configs.
It also works in the partial case because we're compiling the diff. We were talking about this earlier already a little bit. We were kind of jumping the gun there a little bit, I think. So it works for the other vendors because we compile those diffs to some extent with the means that we have. So for iOS XR, for example, I'm taking, what are we taking? Show config merge, show config something. There's some command on iOS XR that was actually showing you what commands do you need to execute to get into the result that you want to achieve.
Yeah, I mean, if you're kind of generating only the entire router BGP configuration, something that you can do, for example, you have to think that the changes are done atomically. That means that you can load a config that says no router BGP, and then router BGP, blah, blah, and then put all the neighbors, the new neighbors. So when you do the commit, you will get the config that you want. So that neighbor will be missing.
Ah, got it. So you turn off BGP first so that you start with clean slate BGP, sort of.
Yeah.
And then you configure BGP to the point where you want to be, And now the box is smart enough to say, well, actually, this is almost the same that I had before, only this neighbor is missing now.
Yeah, exactly. So that's something that you can do as well. If you can configure not the entire config, but the entire router BGP configuration, for example.
So whatever section you can remove, you can configure it as partial config.
Yeah.
And that works on XR.
That works on XR. That works actually on all of them. That works in on EOS. That works on the iOS XR. And that works as well with Juno. So that should work as well with FortiGate. But you have to think that FortiGate doesn't have this commit operation. So that is actually, that has some impact. But you could potentially do it.
You have to do your own dirty tricks in your code, right?
Yeah, the code kind of tries to do that by itself. So you can actually load a block and only apply the difference in that block. So it's doable, but again, it's really ugly.
It's been a while. I almost forgot all the specifics. We were talking about this so much because everything was different. But I guess if you have a full, because I'm always seeing it, I've never replaced configuration, so I've been always seeing it from the, I want to add one single peer, I want to remove a single peer from my config. I think you would actually have to do that specifically, because it wouldn't know what to remove unless you tell it, no BGP neighbor this one.
So in Ansible, you would have to... You shouldn't remove the neighbor in Ansible playbook. You should tell the router to delete this neighbor or something along these lines.
Right. Well, it depends on your workflow a little bit. If you would have an Ansible playbook, remove peer X, and then you would have to give it the variable X, and it would only apply this one removal. You could. It depends on your process and how you structure that, but you could do that this way.
So this definitely makes life way easier. But let's say I'm an Ansible beginner, and yeah, I like this idea. I would like to go down this path, and now I know that I don't have to do any programming, so I'm excited. How do I get started?
Oh, so I was really excited about this when I started looking at this. The barrier of information you need to get started with Ansible is so extremely low. It's fantastic. I looked at it for the first time. And I think it took me like 2 days to understand the basic concept and get a simple playbook working just to change something. I started initially just changing things on servers that I had to administer somewhere just to get a grasp of how it's working. And the first 3 days were the best thing ever. So I can highly recommend if someone has not played with Ansible yet, spend 2 days on it and you'll really get immediate results out of just looking at it and playing around a little bit. It's fantastic.
Yeah, you have to get some... you have to start with Ansible somehow, and there are a lot of tutorials out there that you can check, even if they are for servers. At least you will get a bit the grasp of how Ansible works, what a play is, what a playbook is, how you can set variables and everything.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
In addition, we will be at NANOC 64 in a couple of weeks, and we are planning to do a live demo of Napalm with Ansible. So you will be able to see live how this works, not only talking about Napalm and how cool it is and how it's going to solve all your problems, but we will be shown how to use it and how to do it, and we will have a live network where we will be applying changes and doing different stuff.
So, and hopefully have some examples published too, so we can point people to how to set this up.
Yeah, all the configuration, playbooks, and models used in that presentation, I plan to have them published somewhere on GitHub as well. So you can actually, after the presentation at Nano, go there and get the playbooks, the plays, the models, and check how everything was done. So you can actually follow it or even try yourself.
And at that time, I'll definitely add links to the blog post describing the podcast so that people can go and play with it. And now for some shameless plugs. If someone doesn't want to start playing with Ansible just like that, Matt Oswalt will be running an Ansible, YAML, and Ninja 2 webinar in a few weeks. And if you still don't think you know enough about Ansible, Elisa is always available for remote consulting, right?
Yes, that's true.
Okay, end of shameless plugs. Now, what are your plans with Napalm? How far do you want to push it? What's on the roadmap?
Well, in my case, I plan to use Napalm for all my operations. Right now, the CLI is forbidden other than for troubleshooting. For example, as I mentioned, I build the entire configuration and I push that configuration to the device. That means that if some human goes to the CLI and apply changes, that will be gone after Ansible is run. And that's done in purpose. That's how we want to manage the network. We don't want humans doing anything on the network. We want everything done through some kind of tool like Ansible. So in our case, yeah, we want to do all of the management and operation with Ansible, monitoring, probably even troubleshooting in the future as we kind of improve the tool and add more features. So everything should be done in Ansible.
We also have issues. We collect issues on the GitHub page. So there is a couple of features that we already have in the pipeline and are planning to add in the future. Mainly more data points right now on the retrieval methods, just optical levels, all kinds of information that we haven't added yet because it's a little more on the tricky side and hidden in a different spot in every vendor. So we actually have to sit down and have a beer and agree on everything. But
yeah, well, effectively, you are setting up your own MIPS, right?
Pretty much. Our own vendor-neutral model, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, and because you're not IETF, you get this done in weeks over a beer. You don't need 4 meetings in exotic locations to get it done, right?
Well, the beer is the crucial part, and was it exotic? I don't know. We came up with it. I guess David was in Krakow when we came up with this. So that was kind of exotic. There was beer, vodka, and pierogies.
Yeah, there was.
Don't mention. So if anyone wants to participate in a vodka lab, go to PLNOG.
Exactly. That's a good plug as well here for my hometown. Yeah.
But make sure that you know Polish.
Or have eaten before you get the vodka.
Yeah, that helps.
I remember the story when Ivan, was that when Ivan and I met the same PLNOG? I'm not sure anymore, but there's always this group of people. Can I say this here? There was always this group of people from Global Crossing. I'm not going to mention names now that were visiting PLNOG. And I think it was their first one. And they walked up to the bar and asked the nice lady for 2 vodka, please. And they were really surprised when she put 2 bottles on the bar. They did not count on that.
And of course, they finished them both, right?
Well, the entire group might have, yes.
What did Greg Farrell write on Twitter the day after the vodka lab? I think it was something along the lines that they told me that if you don't mix vodkas, you don't get hangover the next morning. And as always, the vendor claims were grossly exaggerated. Okay, so people, if you want to know more about Napalm, watch David's NANOG presentation. If you want to know more about vodka, go to PLNOG. And if they want to get in touch with you too, how can they do that?
Oh, I guess now is the time for the shameless bigwaveit.org plug.
Of course.
All my contact details are in there with Twitter and everything. So we'll link that, I guess.
And you are available for network automation projects, right?
I am indeed.
And David, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me at dbarroso with 2 R's at spotify.com. And unfortunately, I don't have time for blogging, so that is pretty much it.
And you have a page with plenty of projects on GitHub, right?
Yeah, well, I have a couple, at least. I have the ZN router, I have this Napalm one, I have the Pi EOS, Pi FG, and I think that's everything.
Where can people find that?
Some is under github.com/Spotify. Mm-hmm. And the SDN router, for example, it's under github.com/dbarroso_p, which is my own GitHub account. But yeah, it's mostly on the Spotify repository where you can find it.
And if people want to contribute or have ideas what to do, they just send you an email, or how does that work?
Well, It doesn't really matter. You can send me an email. Happy to read it and answer it as soon as I can. You can also try to publish an issue on the same repo as Elisa suggested before. It doesn't really matter. I mean, just don't be shy and get in touch and we will try to help.
Perfect. So thank you for being with me on this podcast. And I hope you'll get back on some future opportunity when you have more exciting news about Napalm.
Thank you.
All right. That sounds great. Thank you.
And you've been listening to Software Gone Wild. And if you want to listen to more episodes, go to podcast.ipspace.net where you'll find all the previous episodes together with the blog posts that go with that. And if you want to know more about network automation and SDN, go to sdn.ipspace.net where you'll find a large number of SDN resources from webinars, books, presentations, free videos, the past presentations I did, and so on and so on. So you'll find like hours and hours of material to watch. And if you like this podcast, do go on iTunes and review us and give us a 5-star because, you know, the better reviews you write, the more people will find this and the more people will listen to the podcast. So thank you, and we'll be back in approximately a week.